Well, we like to start on time here. We know you're busy people. So good evening and welcome to the first presentation in this, our 18th season of talks on faraway places with strange sounding names, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries. My name is Brian Kutz, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services at WKU, I coordinate this series with help from our webmaster here taking pictures, Haiwan Wan. Dustin Johnson designed our posters, and our technical specialist tonight is Shadon Melke. Our speaker tonight is a native of Albacete, a market town located in southern Spain, where his family has lived for generations, in a region immortalized in Cervantes' Don Quixote de la Mancha. Growing up, he thought of becoming an actor, but then he turned his attentions to the more practical field of English philology. He studied humanities at the University of Castilla-La Mancha, where he later earned a doctorate in English philology in 2007. He currently teaches English at the School of Industrial Engineering at that same school. His research interests are in the field of comparative literature, especially on American and British authors since the 19th century, such as George Orwell and Ernest Hemingway. These two writers are discussed in his recent book and in a past talk he gave in this series, a podcast of which has been one of our most popularly downloaded podcasts. Over the past 150 years, cycling has played an important role in the sport tradition of many European countries, including Spain, which is among the nations with the longest cycling history, one influenced by the Tour of Spain, La Vuelta a España, and Spanish riders who have raced on some of the best teams. For almost three decades, cycling has been our speaker's passion, and he competes frequently in amateur races. To tell us all about this rich tradition and contemporary implications, please welcome Ricardo Marin. Ricardo?
Well, first of all, I would like to thank Brian Kutz for inviting me to take part in this Faraway series for the second time. My last time was five years ago, where I talked about Hemingway and Spain. Now, here I am again with Spain, and on this occasion I'm going to talk about biking in Spain. But I hope that it may be an interesting topic. Well, this topic, it's a topic which may seem easy to deal with, as we could think that it's just about bikes, races, cyclists, and so on. However, like other European countries, such as France, Italy, the Netherlands, Belgium, among others, cycling in Spain is much more than that, since it has become a traditional and cultural phenomenon over the last 150 years. Moreover, biking has recently contributed to the appearance of many new routes and races, specialized magazines, social trends, and a lucrative market in continuous expansion, focused on the selling of bikes, accessories, and it has also given place to a very important touristic activity. Well, taking this into account, I have divided this presentation into three sections. In the first one, I will give an historical overview about the origins and later development of cycling in Spain, focusing on the most important race in the country, which is the Tour of Spain. In Spanish, is La Vuelta a España. Then I will focus on the current situation of cycling, which is a very wide topic. So I think it would take more than a session to talk about this topic, but I will try to give a brief overview of the current situation of cycling in Spain. And finally, I will talk briefly about my personal experience in cycling. Well, let's start with a historical overview. Well, the first cycling race we've heard about was a competition of only 0.75 miles. In which only seven riders took part in this race, and it took place in Paris in 1868. The next year, a new race was celebrated in Paris again. But on this occasion, the distance was much longer. It was 76 miles. It was between Paris and Rouen, a city called Rouen. However, the first official bike race took place between the Italian towns of Florence and Pistoia, and it was about 20 miles long. In this race, by the way, the winner was an American cyclist whose name was Rainer Van Neste. Well, in fact, it was during the 1870s that the first official organizations began to appear, to be established all over the world, especially in Europe. One of the most important associations was the International Cyclist Association, created in the last decade of the 19th century. This institution was the first step towards the foundation of the International Cyclist Union, which nowadays still regulates all the disciplines in cycling. The first important competition was the race known as the 6 Days of London in 1878, as you can see on the slide. This competition was the onset of the Track Cycling World Championships in 1895. A period in which this discipline was particularly promoted and popular. Well, in Spain, many sports began to be increasingly practiced at the end of the 19th century during the historical period known as the Bourbon Restoration. Bourbon doesn't have to do anything with drink. Bourbon comes from the name of the dynasty of the. Today, our king belongs to the Bourbon dynasty. So I think that I have to make clear this, especially in Kentucky. This period was a period of political stability, which enabled the development of a gymnastic and a sports movement, generally referred to in Spain with the English word. So in those years, in Spanish, we said sports. Not deportes. Deporte is the Spanish word, but we use this, the English word, sports. The advance of sports in general, and cycling in particular, was handicapped by the poor modernization of the country, deficient infrastructures, and the existence of a significant number of people who had neither money nor time to practice a sport. However, during the 1890s, cycling in Spain began to overcome such adverse conditions thanks to the impulse given by investors and businessmen who found in the design and manufacturing of bikes a business which guaranteed technological development and plentiful benefits. The expansion and consolidation of cycling during the last quarter of the 19th century had one of its main manifestations in the publication of magazines, this celebration of competitions, and the foundation of many cycling societies. The first Spanish society was the Velo Club, founded in Madrid in 1870. By the end of this decade, new associations appear, such as the Velo Club of Cádiz and the Sociedad de Velocipedistas de Madrid, as you can see there on the slide on your left, the next year. This is a poor balance if we compare the situation to the situation in other European countries. For example, in London in 1878, only in this town, well, city, there were 64 clubs with over 100 members each. In Spain, it wasn't until 1885 that we can talk about a real start of cycling. As we can see, for example, in the foundation of many cycling societies, such as the Sociedad Ciclista Bilbaína. Bilbao is a town in the Basque Country in northern Spain. Club Ciclista Barbastro, that's a town near the Pyrenees in Aragon, in the north, the northeastern part of Spain. Valladolid, Zaragoza. There were different cycling societies which were founded by the 1885. Well, as we can see, the defeat of Spain in the colonial wars in 1898, which involved the loss of Cuba, Filipinas, and Puerto Rico, involved a deep economic and social crisis, hardly stopped the development of cycling movement, due in part to the role played by these societies. Most of them were originally conceived to promote the practice of cycling and gather bike enthusiasts, whose number increased thanks to the lower prices of bicycles and a growing market of second-hand bicycles. Further evidence of the evolution of these sports in these years was the increasing number of publications about cycling in the last quarter of the 19th century. These sorts of publications were often founded by sports practitioners in order to communicate, share their passion with the rest of readers, and extol the virtues of the physical exercise. Gradually, cycling began to make its way into articles and periodicals dealing with other disciplines such as gymnastics, trekking, and equestrian sports. The first Spanish magazine about cycling was El Pedal, which would pave the way for other magazines like El Velocípedo, La Bicicleta, La Velocipedia. El Velocípedo, you get an easy on the right, or on your left, El Deporte. It's a tricky name even for Spanish. El Deporte Velocipédico, which is a bicycle. Velocípedo is the old word used to make reference to a bicycle. The economic crisis that occurred during the 1898 led to the loss of population and purchasing power in Spain, which caused the decrease of cycling supporters and practitioners. As a result, most of these magazines disappeared, although cycling was still present in the periodicals, especially in periodicals, for example, like the one on your right, Barcelona Sport, which was a sports magazine. It dealt with a wide range of sports, and one of those sports was cycling. Well, as cycling was moving forward in Spain, it showed two different sides, the touristic and the competitive. At first, the former was considered as the true essence of this sport, whereas many people found the latter a means of spreading the values related to this sport, such as solidarity, resistance, and so on. Bikes soon became a synonym of individual tourism, freedom, and amusement, particularly in cities. At the same time, the growing enthusiasm that existed around bikes drew the attention of many therapists who found in cycling an excellent resource to preserve physical and mental illnesses. With regard to competitive cycling, during the 1890s, a large number of races appeared all over the country. Normally, these competitions belonged to the discipline of track cycling, and they took place in villages. They were organized during the festivities of villages, and they took place in promenades, parks, and even in bull rings. These venues would be replaced by velodromes a few years later. A velodrome is a venue specially designed for the practice of cycling. Road cycling was not as popular as track cycling, although several time trial and resistance competitions started to take place in Spain and many other European countries. Some of these races were the origin of some of the most important races nowadays, and they are known as the classics. Some of them, just some of them, are Paris-Roubaix, which is an impressive race. It's a very hard race, but it's, you know, fantastic for spectators. This is one of my favorite races. It's a race between Paris and Roubaix. Roubaix is a town in northern France near Belgium. And it's about Well, it's a long. I don't know now the equivalence between kilometers and miles. It's a very long. It's over 200 kilometers. Okay, and there are many parts of the race take part. Takes place on cobbles. Wow. On cobbles. So it's really hard. In many editions, they have bad weather. This race is in April, which is a rainy, windy station in that region of France. So it's really hard, but it's for spectators is really spectacular. Okay. Well, other classic races which were born in this period was the Tour of Flanders in Belgium. And Milan-San Remo in Italy. In Spain, the first race of this type was San Sebastián-Madrid. Well, in Spain, we don't really have a tradition of classic races. The only classic race that nowadays we have nowadays is the classic of San Sebastián. San Sebastián is a town in the Basque Country in northern Spain near France. This race took place only for a few years. I don't remember really well the years. And it was a race between Madrid and San Sebastian. And the distance was 332 miles. 332 miles. Well, competition was understood then as a festivity of bikes in which values like respect and fraternity were highlighted. Although it may seem paradoxical, these events were surrounded at the same time by a profitable and lucrative market based on the purchase of bikes and components, bets, press, race developers, etc., which contributed to introducing professionalism in cycling. As professional races became more and more popular, there were simultaneously an increasing number of protests against competition and professional cycling, stating that it should only be a vehicle to spread the spirit of this sport instead of a menace for its recreational and healthy essence. Cycling in 19th century Spain was a sport mainly practiced by men. Those women who dared to practice this sport were severely criticized by moralists because they were supposed to play the role of faithful wives and good mothers and stay at home all day long. They only could practice cycling under the supervision of men. So imagine that the number of women who dare to compete, not just to ride on a bike, just to compete, to take part in competitions, were really small. The number was really small. And normally they did it not for fun, but just to earn some money. But this was a really weird case. Well, during the first quarter of the 20th century, road cycling became more popular than track cycling. At the beginning of the 20th century, the most important races, the top three, I would call them the top three races, which are Tour of France, Giro d'Italia, and Vuelta a España, so the Tour of France, Italy, and Spain, were born. The evolution of cycling in Spain in this century has been deeply influenced by this race, which started in 1935. Like the other great European races, the Vuelta was organized by a newspaper. I don't know why, but always newspapers has been in charge of organizing these races. In this case, it was the newspaper called Informaciones. You got it on your left. The winner of the first edition was the Belgian Gustave Delors on your left, who won the race also the next year. In 1836, the Spanish Civil War broke out and the Vuelta had to be suspended. The race didn't return until 1941, when the Spanish Julián Berrendero won the race, something that he achieved the next year. Well, after several interruptions due to World War II and the structural difficulties the country was going through during the post-war period, it wasn't until 1956 that the race took place regularly between the months of April and May. Since then, the number of cyclists increased with incorporation of many outstanding Spanish and non-Spanish foreign riders, like, for example, the French Jacques Anquetil, who became the first cyclist to win the race three times in a row. Something that only a few riders achieved. They were Felice Gimondi, Eddy Merckx, Bernard Hinault, Alberto Contador, who retired. By the way, he retired last week after the Tour of Spain. And Vincenzo Nibali, the Italian Vincenzo Nibali, which is today's a professional cyclist. Well, throughout the 70s, the importance of the Vuelta increased with the victories of famous cyclists such as the Spanish riders Luis Ocaña and José Manuel Fuente, who won the race twice, something that the French Bernard Hinault carried out a few years later. In this period, the Vuelta also witnessed the impressive performance of two Belgian riders, Eddy Merckx, I think probably he's the best rider ever, and Freddy Martins. Eddy Merckx won the 1973 edition after having ranked first in six stages, and he won all the individual rankings, excepting the King of the Mountain ranking. And then Freddy Martins won 13 stages and all the individual rankings in 1977. The next year, the company Unipublic took charge of the organization, a circumstance that, along with an increase in advertising and TV and radio broadcasts, meant the consolidation of the Vuelta as one of the most important races in the world. Well, then the 80s were the golden age of this competition. Riders like José Luis Laguía, who won on five occasions the King of the Mountain ranking, and the Irish Sean Kelly, winner on four occasions of the points ranking and winner of the race in 1988, contributed to the rise of the Vuelta, which was followed by more and more spectators. However, the race was hit by doping in 1982 when Ángel Arroyo, the Spanish Ángel Arroyo, lost his title as he tested positive. Sadly, this is something that has frequently happened in cycling. So when many people, when think about cycling, think about doping, it's a sad thing. Mm-hmm. In 1883, the organization included in the edition of that year a mountain stage finishing in Los Lagos de Covadonga, which is a very beautiful scenery. There are a couple of lakes in the mountains in Asturias, in the northern part of Spain, and it became one of the most famous and emblematic stages in La Vuelta. It is a climb, 10 miles climb. It's a very steep climb, and it's normally it's very spectacular. It's very for spectators. During the late 80s, many mountain stages were won by Colombian riders, especially Fabio Parra and Lucho Herrera, who also had an impressive performance in the Tour of France. Although the dominant cyclist by then was the Spanish Pedro Delgado, who obtained the victory twice in 1985 and 1989, and he also won the Tour of France. Well, then, in the first half of the 90s, the Swiss rider Tony Rominger won the race three times in a row. In this period, the two dominated teams were two Spanish teams, Banesto and Once, whose writers carry out unprecedented achievement. In 1895, the year in which the Vuelta started in September, Laurent Jalabert, the French Laurent Jalabert, won all the classifications, something that nobody had done before. Another cyclist from ONCE, Alex Zülle, the Swiss Alex Zülle, got the victory the next 2 years, and today he's still the rider with the highest number of leader jerseys. Likewise, Benesto also had outstanding riders such as Pedro Delgado and José María Jiménez, called El Chava, who ranked first in the King of the Mountain classification 4 times. Moreover, he was the first winner in the stage. It's a stage finishing an impressive climb, also in Asturias. It's called El Angliru. And it's one of the most important stages nowadays in the world. It's an impressive climb. It's about 8 miles, more or less, and it has ramps of about 20% of inclination. So it's crazy. It's crazy, really, and very hard for riders. Well, he was an impressive rider, a very charismatic rider, but he retired and he had mental problems, and finally he killed himself. So he died very young. He was a very young rider. Well, in the following years, the competition was dominated by Roberto Heras, who raced in several teams, and one of those teams was the US Posse, which was the team of Lance Armstrong. He won the Vuelta on 4 occasions, although he was deprived of his last victory on account of his positive result in a doping test. So a doping positive in a doping test, he was riding in US Postal. Isn't it weird? Well, anyway, he recovered his title since the Spanish Supreme Court stated that the doping test was not carried out in the most suitable conditions, something that personally I don't believe, okay, but it's a personal opinion. Well, the winners of the following editions were Alejandro Valverde and Alberto Contador, who in 2008 became the first Spanish rider to win Tour of France, Tour of Italy, and Tour of Spain, or Vuelta. After 2010, ASO, which is the organizing company of Tour of France, took over the Spanish race and introduced some changes, such as shorter stages, a higher number of explosive and thrilling climbs, which made the race be more attractive for spectators. Personally, I prefer to see a stage from Vuelta a España or Giro d'Italia instead of a stage of Tour of France. Many stages in Tour of France are really boring for me because they are very long and nothing happens until the last miles, the last part of the race. It's my opinion also. Well, besides the Vuelta, the rise of cycling in Spain during the last decades must be attributed to the brilliant performance of many Spanish riders, not only in the top three, but also in classic races, in the Olympic Games, and also in the World Championships. Well, you can see on the slide a picture of Miguel Indurain, which is a very famous Spanish cyclist. He won 5 Tour of France. Only Lance Armstrong won more tours than Indurain, but we'll know how he did it. Okay. Well, that's another story. Well, Bernard Hinault? No, I don't think so. I think it was 5. Yeah, I think the rider with the highest number of victories in Tour of France is Lance Armstrong. And I'm not sure, I think Eddy Merckx and Bernard Hinault and Miguel Indurain won 5, yeah. Anyway, it's an impressive number. Well, now I'm going to continue talking about current situation of cycling in Spain. Well, in spite of the fact that nowadays soccer is a dominant sport in Spain, the number of cyclists in this country is growing steadily, and cycling is the most practiced sport in Spain. Thousands of people ride their bikes either to commute or just for fun every day, with more people riding on weekends. However, Spain is still far from other European countries such as the Netherlands and Denmark in terms of the daily use of bikes. Statistics confirm the mounting trend in the use of bicycle in Spain. So we can see, for example, that over the last years, the average expenditure in bikes has been about $350, and the average age of those who have bought a bike is between 24 and 35. It is also worth mentioning that 82% of those who have a bike use it to do exercise, and the rest use it as a means of transportation. The more and more frequent practice of cycling in Spain has resulted in an interrupted growth of the bike manufacturing sector. Over the last 5 years, the increase of companies related to bike manufacturing has been 12%, and right now there are more than 350 companies related to the bike sector. Because of this, the bike industry has been one of the least affected sectors by the economic crisis, and it is actually one of the pillars on which the growth of the Spanish economy has taken place. The unstoppable development of bike industry has resulted in good employment rates, which were even higher than the average growth of jobs in Spain during 2015. This excellent dynamics is also the consequence of new marketing strategies carried out by many manufacturers who have found in the exhibition of their latest innovations in the most important cycling races and trade shows forums, not only for exhibiting their products, but also to sell them, sometimes at bargain prices. Nowadays, the most important cycling bike show in Spain is Unibike, which I think is going to be held this weekend. Yeah. And it takes place in Madrid. And this event is a clear example of the convergence between business and leisure occurring in the frame of cycling. This is a formula which has proved to be successful since, for example, last year 33,000 people visited Unibike. So it's a lot of people. Well, on the other hand, urban areas have become places where the increasing frequency in the use of bikes has been more noticeable. This trend must be attributed especially to two factors. One of them is the economic crisis and the rise in fuel prices, which force a lot of people to sell their automobiles, or at least not to use them with the same frequency as before. Given the situation, many people found in public transportation and bikes the perfect alternative to move around. On the other hand, town halls have promoted the usage of bicycles with consciousness raising campaigns, the creation of rental services, and the construction of bike lanes. Well, some of the cities which are making a huge investment in the construction of bike lanes and the construction of infrastructure thought for the use of bikes are, one of them is Madrid. Madrid has an important network of bike lanes, which is known as El Anillo Verde, the Green Ring, which is about 44 miles long. Moreover, the town hall has created a service called La Oficina de la Bici, the bike office, which is a service which provides bikers and pedestrians as well with very useful information about the use of this sort of infrastructures. In Barcelona, well, there are 150,000 trips registered every day on bikes, Then Sevilla. Sevilla has become one of the main models of urban cycling in Europe. In fact, it was declared as the best town to move around on bike in 2013. Nowadays, Sevilla has a bike line which is over 100 miles long, and 68,000 trips are registered every day. Another example is Zaragoza, where commuters can access the public rental service called Bizi, which is a simple, practical, and sustainable service which can be used in combination with other public transports. Well, San Sebastian is a very nice place to, well, not only to bike around, also to eat and to go out at night and so on, but, well, we are talking about bikes here. It's very nice to bike around San Sebastian because you have a very beautiful, it's a very beautiful town. It's also very expensive. So you have, as you can see on the slide, very beautiful scenery, urban scenery to move around on bike. Although sometimes weather is really bad, if you ever go to Spain, I recommend you to visit San Sebastian. It's a really nice town. Well, near San Sebastian, we have Vitoria. Vitoria is a town also in the Basque Country. Vitoria is remarkable because it was the first town to introduce a rental service in 2004. Currently, 8% of the inhabitants use bikes as a means of transportation in Vitoria. Another beautiful city with an important bike service is Córdoba in the south, in Andalusia. You see, it is the hottest town in Spain. So if you've ever thought of visiting Spain in summer, do not go to Córdoba. It's an oven. It's an oven. Okay, it's a hell. Well, I don't know, the equivalent to Fahrenheit, maybe it's over 90. So it's crazy. In degrees Celsius, maybe over 40. Maybe, what's equivalent?
In the summer, I guess it would be 44, 45. Right? Did it hit 45?
And in Fahrenheit degrees is? 100?
More than 100.
Terrible. So, it's terrible. Well, in Córdoba, Córdoba is famous apart from the historical heritage and the heat. It's famous for because 10% of the inhabitants use bikes to move around in spite of the hot weather. Finally, well, Albacete, which is our town in Mar. It's our town, Albacete. Well, Melissa is also from Albacete, essentially. Well, Albacete is a nice place to live, okay, why not? We have a fantastic infrastructure for biking around. In fact, Albacete is worth mentioning here, since this town has one of the highest satisfaction rates in relation to the existing conditions to practice cycling. So, it's a nice town. Well, on the other hand, the most important infrastructure for cycling outside towns is the so-called, in Spanish, vías verdes, greenways. In English, is greenways, which have meant the reconditioning of 1,500 miles of disused or unfinished railroads to use them as bike lanes since 1993. No doubt, this public project has benefited not only cyclists, but also pedestrians and disabled people who can enjoy these infrastructures which are part of the Spanish historical and cultural heritage. Greenways are something more than the recovery of old railroads for recreational purposes, since it has also involved the promotion of landscape values and contributed to the development of depressed rural areas with the creation of new routes, services such as hotels, restaurants, and so on. Well then, if you are fond of competition, you can find in Spain many opportunities to practice sports cycling. At this point, we must distinguish between two kinds of races. One of them are Gran Fondo races, which are long races. They are about 120 miles. And they are races where you can find about 1,000 or even more, several thousands of riders taking part in this kind of races. In theory, they are not competitive races, but in fact, they are. I recognize that when I take part in this kind of races, I take it as a competition, but in theory, they are not. Two of the most important races of this kind in which I took part are... this is the map of Greenways. Well, this is... You can see here the network of Greenways. I live here in Albacete, and we've got a 100-mile-long Greenway. Goes from Albacete to the mountains in Jaén. Well, this is Andalucía. Okay, so here you can see the whole network of Greenways. Well, I was talking about competition. I took part in two Gran Fondo races, well, in several of them, but probably the two most important races are the race called Pedro Delgado, which is a race which takes place in honor of Pedro Delgado. Well, this is my wife. I took a picture with ex-professional rider Pedro Delgado. This race is takes place in Segovia, and it goes through the mountains near Madrid and Segovia. Okay. Well, the other one was the race known as La Quebranta Huesos. The translation would be the Bone Crusher. Well, it has a double meaning. The Bone Crusher, the Quebranta Huesos, is a bird of prey, which is very famous in the Pyrenees. This race starts from a town near the French border in the Pyrenees, and we went across the border, okay, between Spain and France. And the name of the Bone Crusher also involves or makes reference to the fact that it's a hard race, because it's in miles, it's 130 miles long, and we went over some of the most important mountain passes in the Pyrenees, in that region of the Pyrenees. So it's a grueling race. Okay. Well, here you can see some pictures taken of this race. I took part in it last June. It was in last June. Well, on the other hand, besides races for professional or semi-professional riders, there are truly competitive races for non-professional cyclists like me. There are races open to riders of several ages, from 18 years old to 60-year-old. They are really old people for racing, but there are people with that of that age who take part in races. Okay. Then children from 8 to 14 compete in another kind of races. These competitions are shorter. They are about from 50 to 62 miles, and they are faster than Grand Fondo races, where here we can have an average speed around 26 miles per hour. Given the high number of these races, although some of them have disappeared due to economic and also traffic issues, and the growing number of licenses to ride in these competitions, we can say that these kind of races are becoming more and more popular in recent years. More specifically, in Spain, we have 3,426 clubs registered in the National Federation, and 348 of these clubs have racing teams. Well, these are the kind of races I often take part in. Although I had raced in some competitions before, like the Carlos Astre race in Avila, where I ranked 30 out of 1,100 participants during two consecutive years, or the Cat Light race, in which I obtained the 7th position out of 800 riders, it wasn't until 6 years ago that I started to compete more regularly. My first team was the NutriFitness Fora, with which I raced in competitions all over the provinces of Murcia, Alicante, Valencia, Albacete, Ciudad Real. They are in the southeastern part of Spain, central and southeastern part of Spain. And my best result in this squad was the team regional championship. After 4 years in this team from Albacete, I signed for another team. It's a team from Alicante, which is the Bici Sport Poli Automóviles Gomis. And during my stay in this team, I ranked 2nd in the regional championship in my category for 2 years in a row, and I obtained several top 3 positions. I still race in this team. Well, I wouldn't like to finish my presentation without pointing out that being a member of a cycling team and having the opportunity to take part in races has always been a dream for me. Since I was 15, when I started to practice cycling, when I weighed almost 220 pounds, you can believe it. I was so fat that I usually played basketball when I was a teenager. Every time I played basketball, I had injuries in my knees, my ankles. And I remember going to the doctor one time with my mom, and he told me, well, if you go on like this, if you go on playing basketball, you will end in a wheelchair. So it was really scary for me. Imagine that I was a 15 years old boy. And then I decided, well, I had to change my mind, I had to change another sport, I had to change my habit. And so it was like that I started to lose weight gradually. Well, at the same time, my dad told me, Ricardo, you will never succeed in cycling. So, and that encouraged me to start practicing cycling and to do it. Hard, okay? Well, my dad is a nice guy, okay? But you have to understand him that he had a son of 220 pounds. And it was hard to imagine that I could practice cycling and I could take part in competitions. Well, due to this poor physical condition and lack of systematic and specific training for racing because of personal and labor-related circumstances stopped me from living this dream until I was 35. 6 years later, I still train and race with the same passion as ever in my free time, and I will keep on doing it as long as I feel healthy and motivated. Generally speaking, practicing a sport at a certain level of perseverance for a long time leaves a print in our habits and our way of facing and understanding life. I believe this is particularly true with cycling, which is a sport that requires values and qualities that eventually shape your life, such as determination, courage, patience, solidarity, and being methodical. From my point of view, sport must be regarded as a school for life and a source of knowledge as important as others that we can find in our lives. This has been my case and still is. Well, with this short reflection on my personal experience in cycling, I finish this presentation with which I have tried to give an overall view of cycling in Spain, its history, its current situation, and well, my brief personal experience. Now, I hope that you are more interested now in everything related to bikes and Spain, which is an attractive and suggestive combination for, who knows, your next stay in Spain. Thank you very much.
We have time for questions. So what bike do you ride?
Excuse me?
What bike do you ride?
Well, my last bike was a Trek bike, Trek, which is manufactured in Wisconsin. But I only had that bike only for 1 year because it was kind of problematic for me. I have problems with my back, probably due to the geometry of the bike. They are not designed for racing. They are more for long races. I have really bikes. So I would change to another American brand, which is Felt. It's built in California. But that's all. And then
Carbon fiber.
Yeah. Most of bikes nowadays are made of carbon fiber, at least for racing. The good thing is that you can find different types of carbon fiber bikes. Very expensive carbon fiber bikes and less expensive carbon fiber. It depends on the type of the frame, or how fibers are positioned, something like that. Good bikes. Yeah? Sonia.
Hey. Well, thank you for allowing us to
It's been a pleasure.
Through the history of bicycling. You mentioned that back in the days, the women were not seen in a favorable eyes. Have that changed? Have it increased substantially throughout the years? And if so, can you talk about a tipping point?
And the factors that have helped increase the level of
participation of women, and what was like a certain time period where it increased substantially?
Yeah, well, definitely. The participation of women in cycling has increased a lot. So we have now a very different situation from those years. I made reference to the situation of women during the 19th century, but we could even imagine that situation during the 50s, the 60s. So it wasn't until the 80s, the 90s that we can really talk about female cyclists. And right now, important. Cycling teams of women are being developed. They are new female cyclist teams are appearing. Well, as it's happening with other sports, cycling is becoming more popular, and women are being a part of that movement. Mm-hmm. More questions, David.
What is the shortest possible race for an unhealthy beginner?
What a question.
Time trial?
Maybe 1 mile. I don't know if there are races.
Like a short time trial or something like that.
But time trials are shorter, but they are hard. You have to do everything you have, everything.
Maybe just a beginner.
For a beginner, I don't really know. What's the shortest?
Into the driveway.
Yeah. Maybe I will check it out. Probably I will find a 1 mile race for you.
you mentioned, go ahead, Tom.
That 40 plus mile ride around Madrid, what kind of needed elevation would you have beginning to end?
In Madrid?
Yeah.
I think the bike lane, you mean the bike lane? Yeah. I think the bike lane, you have to take into account that bike lanes are thought for every kind of people, not only for riders who are in a very good shape. So they are mainly flat. Maybe there can be a little bit of elevation, but it's not too much. Not too much.
For a tourist who's just going to Spain and wants to have an interesting biking experience, where would they go?
Whoa. A good option.
Albacete.
Well, actually, yeah, you're right. Albacete is a good option to bike around. But I was thinking about El Camino de Santiago. It's do you know it? It's the route. It is a medieval route, followed by pilgrims during the medieval ages. They come from France, and they went all the way from the Pyrenees to Santiago de Compostela. And nowadays, many people do that route on bikes, walking, on horses. So they are kind of pilgrims. But there are many routes. You also have the option of greenways, which is a very nice option. They are not very long. So it's an option for you, maybe you can do it. And they are nice. They are really nice. It's such a wide topic that probably I could be here talking about it for more than one session. Then if you want to go biking in towns, you can see that you have several options in towns like Vitoria, San Sebastian, Sevilla. But do not go to Cordoba or Sevilla in the summer and go biking.
You didn't say much about the expenses of biking as this kind of passion.
Well, it's an expensive sport. It's an expense, especially if you buy carbon fiber bikes. The outfit sometimes really is really expensive.
You're on a team. Does the team help?
Yeah. Thanks God they helped me to pay for the expenses because, for example, bicycles are we buy bicycles, but they are 50% less off. The team pays for the outfit. Yeah, they pay for when we have to move to other towns to race, or if we are taking part in 2 or 3 days races and we have to stay at a hotel. So yeah, they pay for it. Although unfortunately this year we're having a budget cut. I assume that I would have to pay for. This is a bad news for my wife. So. And you have to pay for more money.
My Unix computer didn't work because of the new upgrade to the iOS. Now I download a new one. So the 44 Celsius equals to 111.
It's a lot. Probably it's the hottest town in Spain.
One more question, and then we'll get to the door prize. Anyway. How many people here are biking enthusiasts? Lots of them, yeah.
Ah, awesome. I was really happy before coming to Bowling Green. I was really happy to see on the internet that you have here more infrastructures for biking than several years ago. My second stay in 2008, I taught here as a semester and teaching Spanish in the Department of Modern Philology, Modern Languages. I bought a bike. It was in the second semester from January to May. And I used the bike only twice because of the cold weather. It was terrible. Terrible. It was the coldest winter in my life. Yeah. It's cold over there in Spain, but here is awesome. And yeah, awesome. And I only used my bike twice because roads were really dangerous. I found roads really dangerous. I couldn't find good infrastructures for biking. And before coming to Bowling Green, I searched on the internet and I saw, for example, that Western Kentucky University, there is a biking group or something like that. There are parks with more bike lanes. So I was really happy that you have this kind of infrastructures here in Bowling Green.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.